Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by SuperValu Insurance, looking out for you and yours with our new life and mortgage protection insurance.
Well, my first guest this morning is the lovely Dawn O'Porter, writer, podcast host, former TV presenter and frequent visitor to Boyle, County Roscommon with her husband, actor Chris O'Dowd. Her new book, Honeybee, is about enduring female friendship and the importance of a good wing woman. And it's set on Guernsey in the Channel Islands. Dawn O'Porter, good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Thanks so much for joining us. Listen, I loved it. It's a great read. You'll have to introduce all of us now to your two main characters first, Renee and Flo. They featured, of course, before in your young adult books, Paper Airplanes and Goose, when they were still in school. And now they're in their 20s, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I knew I was going to do a third instalment, and I just had to choose what age I was going to bring them back as. And for a minute there, I was like, I'll bring them back when they're 30. But then for me, the age of 22 was a really significant year, particularly that summer of kind of education being fully over, getting home from university and then thinking, well, what happens now? And it was such a massive time in my life that I thought that's the perfect moment to bring Renee and Flo back.
And it works so strongly for that reason. I'd sat in Guernsey, where, of course, you spent a lot of your childhood. Tell us about Guernsey and Ireland. Like, the girls, they can't wait, of course, to leave at one point, but then they see it differently as they get a bit older.
Yeah, so Guernsey's just this amazing, extraordinary place, which is tiny. It's like 7 miles by 4 miles and very, very self-sufficient. And for a lot of people, they never leave and they have a wonderful quality of life, and that's great. But for me as a kid, I was desperate to get to the mainland. I thought everything was bigger, more exciting. The entertainment industry, which I wanted to be in, was like calling my name. I wanted to just get to the city and live that fast-paced life. And so getting back with these characters to that stage in my life as well of, like, you know, imagining what's beyond the island. It was really, really fun to go back to that time. But I Renee, one of the girls, is very much like me. And so what I do with her is I sort of do a bit of a sliding doors about what if I'd have made this decision and lived my life slightly differently. So that's what I'm doing with her. But the book is a celebration, really, of that island life and that extraordinary safety that you have when you come from a small place like that, because you know you can always go back.
And have you gone back there much, Dawn? I mean, what's
it
like now?
Yeah, I go back all the time. Oh, it's brilliant. I take my kids back there now. So I'm seeing Guernsey through their eyes all over again. It's like, you know, having been desperate to leave as a teenager, I now am desperate to go back all the time. It's such a gorgeous island and it's so safe. So the kids get this level of freedom that they really can't have anywhere else. You know, they kind of run down the cliff path on, and that sounds terrifying, it's a very safe cliff path, they run down to the beach ahead of me, when in London I'd never let them go out of my sight, you know. So they love it, and it's so beautiful with beaches and the cliff walks, and the town is so pretty, and so I go back a lot, my family's still there.
That's from where your mother was from, was it originally, Dawn?
Well, my mother was a Londoner. My family were Londoners. They moved to Guernsey in the 70s. They did the reverse of what I did. And I think maybe it was the fact that they used to talk about London so affectionately, which is why I had this this kind of love for it before I'd ever even been there.
Are there parts, I was thinking of you in both characters, or are you more Renee, the aspiring writer with the beautiful, brightly coloured clothes?
I mean, it sounds quite familiar, doesn't it? I am definitely Renee through and through. I feed myself, pour myself into her. And I've said this many times in interviews this week, that writing Renee has been the greatest therapy of my life. Just, you know, I get through so many of the issues in my head by fictionalizing them through Renee. But there is also a piece of me in Flo. And, you know, Flo is the more kind of guarded, fearful version of myself. But really, she is a figment of my imagination. And the reason for Flo is to be the exact opposite to Renee. And that's what the book is about. These two very, very different girls, but who have this friendship that they need so much because they bonded over the shared grief of losing a parent. And the fact that they need each other. And so their friendship is being constantly pulled apart by the fact that they're so different. But, you know, I have to weld them back together again. And I think what readers have always said is, never have I kind of gone for a friendship so much. These two girls who just shouldn't be friends, they've got to stay together because they need each other. And so that's kind of what the book is about. So I guess in many ways, Flo is my alter ego.
And if you think about Renee for a moment, she was pretty chaotic, or she is pretty chaotic. Were you like that at that age?
Definitely. I had a head full of dreams. I was a yes person. I was like, if I saw an opportunity for fun or success, I would throw myself at it. I would go into any room full of people and just work the room. But then also a mess. You know, I was temping or working in a bar at that age, spending all of my money before I paid my rent. I had no idea how to be an adult, and I just threw myself at everything. And that is such a character trait of mine. It's finally when you're 45 with two children, you do settle a bit, but it's definitely the kind of person that I am.
There are also really serious themes in this book. You know, Flo, she has a drink problem she can't admit to. Both of them are obviously, as you said, dealing with childhood grief, dysfunctional relationships with parents, co-workers. But you're really forcing them to grow up, aren't you, in the book?
Well, I think yes. And I think that's what that age is like. You are suddenly out there in the world on your own, and all of the things that have been kind of masked by the fact that you've got, you know, term times, or you live with your parents, or you're getting a, you know, funding to go to university, or you're getting pocket money, or whatever it is that has kept you very safe. You're suddenly launched into this world where you haven't got that protection around you, and the cracks of your personality can really, really show. And in the case of Flo, I find the idea of young alcoholism really, really interesting. And looking back at that time, and knowing what I know now about quite a few people in my life, there was a lot of alcoholism at play that was yet to be identified. And I think it's a really interesting thing to write about, that you think, can a young person be an alcoholic? No, you're fine. You're just drinking too much. Sort yourself out. And yet I spoke to a friend of mine that I went to school with, because she posted on Facebook once about how she was kind of admitting that she had a problem with alcohol in her 20s. And I was like, oh, wow, that's so interesting. And so I called her and spoke to her for hours, and she just talked me through what it felt like and what she'd been through, and, you know, admitting that it was a problem and getting recovery. And I was like, that's got to be Flo's story, because that just makes so much sense for her. And I think it is a subject that is explored massively later in life, and not necessarily with younger people.
Yeah, I think that's so true. But just in case listeners think it's all heavy stuff, it's not. It's funny, it's cheeky. I suppose that's the nature, Dawn, of 20-something friendship. It's kind of messy, isn't it?
It's messy. I'm really glad you said that, because when I think of this book, I can't stop laughing. Like, it really makes me laugh. And the, you know, the situations that they get into and the way they try to resolve stuff, and all just learning everything for the first time. And this also, one of my favorite things about it is the presumption that adults have it all together. And they look at the adults and think, God, you know, it must be amazing being you. You know how to pay bills. You know how to do everything. And then you kind of cut to the adult who's burning herself on a frying pan, whose life is a mess, who's having, you know, going through the menopause, feel like she's losing control. And yet, as a young person, you think that the old people have got everything in line. And I love that, because even though, like I said, I'm 45, I've got two kids, and I'm more organized than I ever have been before, you still have days when you haven't got a clue how to get to 5 p.m. You know, it's you never really work it all out.
No, never. Listen, why'd you call it Honeybee, by the way?
Well, because one of the characters in the book keeps bees. Renee's auntie keeps bees. And my auntie growing up kept bees. So we had 5 beehives in our garden. And I think bees are one of those animals that goes through a process to become an adult. So like, it physically, you know, larvae, pulpae, and then becomes, you know, a grown bee. Also, I think there's just something really magical about the honeybee, how it is so strong but also so fragile, which I think is a really nice analogy for femininity and being a woman. You can feel so strong but also so fragile, and I think all of the characters have that about them, and I also just love bees.
Now, you, of course, many people know, lost your own mother when you were so young, like Renee. Do you mind me asking you, Dawn, what your strongest memories of her are? Were you only 7 when she died? Is that right?
Yeah. And I think when you lose a parent that young, it's all very sensory. So it's her red nails, her Chanel number 5, and I remember her cold skin when she came in from work. And then you have a few memories dotted around that you're not really sure if they're dreams or real. But it's, I know the smell is real. So my mother-in-law, hi, Denise, she wears Chanel number 5, and sometimes I get a whiff of it and I'm like, oh, that takes me right back. That takes me right back. So, you know, one of the frustrations of losing a parent really young is that you don't have many memories. Mm-hmm. And that's part of that's part of the grief, I think.
How do you think, when you look back now, it affected you? I mean, to be honest, a sister of mine died of cancer when she was 33, leaving a 4 and 2 year old daughter. And now, obviously, they're great and they're grown up. But I do think it impacts people hugely. Do you reflect on that now and think, as you become an older woman now with children yourself, of the loss of a mother? It's so huge.
It's huge. Firstly, I'm really sorry about your sister. It's really sad. It is huge. And, you know, my kids are now the age that my sister and I were when my mother died. And so I do think about it sometimes. I thought I was really young and didn't know what was going on. And I look at Valentine and I'm like, no, if that happened to him, he'd know exactly what was going on, and realizing how much I kind of buried my trauma. But I do think, you know, it's a hugely impactful thing. I was so young when it happened. I can't really imagine my life any other way. It's obviously a massive tragedy, but it's definitely been a very driving force for me as well. And it's made me who I am, which eventually turned out to be someone that I really, you know, like. And so it's very difficult to imagine me being any different, or like not having that thing that's such a huge part of me. I do also think that, you know, with the right people around you, you can get through anything. And that also goes for bereaved children. It's about, you know, the support that they get from other people and the help that they're given. There is no reason why bereaved children can't go on to live a very, you know, happy and productive life. It was very difficult back in the 80s in Guernsey. There was no support offered. I feel like I've been incredibly lucky because I've been able to kind of therapize myself through fiction and writing. But as long as you have an outlet, you know, I think that's really important. But, you know, it's no doubt absolutely tragic.
Yeah, but you're close to your dad as well. Does he live in Scotland?
Yeah, my dad's in Scotland. Big Billy. He's great.
Is he big?
We call him Big Billy. I think he's really probably 6'2", but he just has always been Big Billy.
He's big. And because you were saying recently, I read an article that I think you went on a holiday back to Scotland. You love Scotland and you love spending time. I think he was there with a good friend of his.
Yeah, Ronnie. Mm. Yeah, we had this perfect week in Scotland a couple of years ago where, for the first time ever, both my kids, my sister and her kids were all, and our partners were all there at the same time. And Ronnie's got a boat called Summer Wine. And we spent the week out on this boat in calm sea, fishing, pulling up the lobster pots, going home and eating our catch. It was like this kind of magical holiday. My kids, who haven't spent much time with my dad because we've been living in America, were just like, this guy is the best. It was so cute.
Oh, that's so nice, actually. Now, of course, you've been a successful writer for years, but a lot of listeners will remember you, Dawn, as a TV presenter, especially the great documentaries. Is that something that's firmly behind you, or would you ever return to doing TV work?
I don't think so. I love writing being my main job, and I do lots of other things as well. So I'm so busy. And I think with TV, it's long days. It's being away from home. I feel like I've done all that, and I'm not sure I would do it again. I never say never, but I don't think I'd ever return to what I did before, certainly. And also, I love my life of going sitting at my desk all day and writing books, and then once or twice a year I kind of come out of the cave and publicize some work, and that's really fun and kind of scratches my itch of attention seeking. And then I go back into my writing den again, and I really love that.
And where is home for you these days? And of course, the lovely Chris O'Dowd, your husband from Boyle. Are you based in London, or are you still in LA these days?
No, we've moved back to London now, which is great. And I'm loving it. I absolutely love London. I've always loved London. Before I ever lived here, when I was living on Guernsey, I romanticized it about in my head that it was just this place I was supposed to be. And I still feel that way about it now. And coming back is just wonderful.
And of course, Chris, we all know he's hugely successful, but he comes across, he's always so down to earth. I've interviewed him a few times. Do you think there's something distinctly Irish about that, Dawn? Like, you wouldn't want to get too big for your boots in Boyle, would you?
No. And also, like, Chris is just so proud of his Irishness. And I think he's really never happier than when he's in Boyle. And he really feels like that's where his, you know, he feels most comfortable. And I feel like there's this really lovely feeling that Ireland's quite proud of him, which always just feels really lovely when we go back. And he loves, you know, he writes shows and makes them in Ireland. And that is something that he's very, very, very passionate about doing. And so his connection to Ireland is so, so, so strong. But I think generally Ireland is so supportive as a country of people, you know, anyone who's kind of made it big. I feel like Ireland really gets behind and really enjoys. So it's just such a positive relationship. So, you know, when you're come from a small town and you become quite famous, it could feel very weird to go back to that town, and it never does. It just feels lovely.
No, they love him. Irish people love Chris. He's never big for his boots, though. He's just a lovely guy. Also, yeah. I was reading an interview, Dawn, with The Times, that you said a way back when, but you did hit a hard patch when he was really successful in Bridesmaid, but you were having a bit of a crisis of confidence. What do you think, when you look back now, was going on with you then?
Oh, I wish I could just go back and shake myself. So get over yourself and just enjoy it. And I did enjoy it. You know, in an interview, it can sound like I was all really down. It was all really sad time. It was a brilliant time in our lives when Chris did Bridesmaids. I just didn't have any work myself at the time, and just felt a bit like, oh, I wish I was in these situations feeling brilliant, you know, really being like, I do this amazing thing, but my confidence was just on the floor. And I just wish that I could just go back and say, get over yourself, go to the party, drink the champagne, and just have a great time on this amazing hot husband's arm.
Listen, how old are your two little boys now? I'm sure, are they showing signs of wanting to be actors, writers?
They're 9 and 7, and they're both like terrifyingly good on stage and really enjoy it. So we'll see. You know, it's just that kind of age where kids are just into everything. You're like, I'm so fascinated to see what direction they go in. Everything is fine with me as long as they work hard. That's how I feel about the entertainment industry or whatever they want to do. Don't feel like you can just, you know, we're not doing YouTube channels and you're not going to be big on TikTok. If you want to be an artist, you have to make art.
That's really interesting. Do you think that's part of your own success? Just hard work, commitment, dedication to what you do?
I think so. And Chris and I are both very, very, you know, we work really hard at what we do. And it's not about the fame and all that side of it. It's about creating really, really good work. And I think the kids see that and they see us working hard. And so they've got that ethic about them as well, which is great.
Now, I saw you were interviewed for the Boyle Arts Festival this year by none other than our own Brian Dobson. Slightly unlikely pairing, I was thinking. He's a fabulous guy. But how did it go? Had he read your books?
Great. He did a really good interview, and it was, you know, proper. It was being interviewed by a proper journalist who'd researched me from years back. You're right, it was an unlikely pairing, but worked brilliantly. I think he was, I didn't grow up watching him, obviously, because I wasn't Irish, but I immediately just got such a sense of warmth and completely understood why he was such a national treasure. I really loved meeting him.
Yeah, he's fabulous. And of course, you're really into clothes. I think it's lovely you mentioned memories of your mum there and how stylish she was. I know from your podcast, you love to talk to people about the clothes choices they make and how, you know, I suppose they make them feel. Even people who don't think of themselves as being really into fashion, they are into fashion, aren't they?
Yeah, well, I think if you buy three of the same thing from a catalogue and wear that every day, that says as much about you as someone like me who walks in wearing a big shiny pink caftan and a turban. You know, it's like, I think it doesn't have to be that you're into fashion, but the way that you dress speaks volumes about who you are. And I find that so interesting from both ends of the spectrum, how people don't think about what they're wearing. What's that like? Because I think about what I'm wearing constantly. Like, have you got all of these hours in the day that I don't have because you're not spending so much of your time trawling the internet for another vintage dress? So I love talking to people about why they wear what they wear.
Why do you think you love vintage so much? And when did that love affair begin?
I think I love it so much because my family were furriers in the 60s and 70s. They don't do that now before anyone comes at me. They did back then. But they would always, and my uncle would, you know, turn clothes inside out and say, this is how this was made. And, you know, and I think they really talked to me about London in the 60s and the scene. And I just found, I've just always loved the way that fashion, especially in, you know, 50s, 60s and 70s, portrayed what was going on in society at the time. Sometimes, imagine being a woman who got to wear a short skirt for the first time and being involved in that movement of freedom. You know, the way that during the war there was fabric restrictions, and so it was. I just find that all the fashion history so interesting, and I think I just got brought up talking about that kind of thing, and so I just always thought I am obsessed with stories. That's why I do what I do for a living. And when clothes also have a story, that just sends me over the edge. I think that's just brilliant.
Absolutely. Listen, your charity Choose Love, it's done such great work. Are you still heavily involved in that?
Yes. So my main role with Choose Love is fundraising. So I put on events all the time, trying to raise as much money as we can for displaced people all over the world. It's a never ending job. There'll never be enough money in the pot, but we've managed to raise over 100 million so far in the 9 years that we've existed.
Wow.
And that's gone to displaced people all over the world. And it is one of the great honours of my life to do that job. I love it so much. And I'm relentless. I'll do anything to raise some money for Choose Love.
Well done, you. Look, finally, do you think you'll return to Renee and Flo again, maybe in their 30s?
100%. As I was writing this book, I was like, this is just, I feel in many ways, just the beginning. We've just hit adulthood. Like, where do these girls go from here? So I will absolutely be bringing them back.
Well, Dawn O'Porter, I loved it. It's a great read. Thank you very much for being my guest this morning. Your book is called Honeybee and it's published by HarperCollins. Thanks for taking the time to speak to us this morning, Dawn.
Thank you so much.
Mind yourself. Take care.